Hello, I'm Ian Stone. Welcome to the show. What's that you say? What have you got coming up? Well, I'll tell you. We'll talk about who's buying Manchester United. I'm wondering whether Harry Redknapp is about to make a surprise comeback into management. We'll also talk Tottenham and ask if Antonio Conte really is as happy in his job as he seems to be. So take the weight off, because the football's on. Welcome to the show. I hope the hors d'oeuvre of Liverpool against Real Madrid has warmed you up for the meaty main course of three comedians talking about other matches. Our guests are two men from very different socio-economic backgrounds who I think it's fair to say would never have met if it wasn't for comedy. It's Elliot Steele and Ivo Graham.
Hello, Ian.
Elliot, what have you noticed?
I've noticed that there's a lot more, there's a lot more nerds in football now. And because of that, the language is starting to change. And now people who don't really, I don't think they actually watch the games. I think they watch statistics. So they start giving out things like, they start saying things like XG and all of this stuff. But they've never actually watched a game before. So they then go, oh, but this player's great because on my fantasy football team, they're worth this amount of points. And this player's terrible because they don't get that many points in fantasy football. And you're like, well, yeah, that's because they're a, you know, they're like a central defensive midfielder. They're not always going to be scoring.
Yeah, people do like the stats, though. XG, I find a little bit troubling, I'll be honest with you. Ivo, do you like the XG?
No, I think it's a blight on the game. But I have started talking about quite a lot of my gigs that go badly in terms of XL. The amount of laughs that I felt entitled to receive, even though actually the reality was much bleaker.
How did Ivo go at the weekend? What was his XL? I think that's great. What have you got for us, Ivo? What have you noticed this week?
Well, it's obviously lovely to be doing this show in the most romantic week of the year, off the back of Valentine's Day. And I don't know what you guys were doing on the big night, but I obviously had my eyes trained on Wealdstone against Brentford B. It was the only thing to be watching. And that's because one of the great prophecies came to be, which was that Romeo Beckham, the most romantic name in sport, came off the bench for Brentford B and scored the winner away at Wealdstone. And I am delighted to see Romeo Beckham finally getting his feet under the table of semi-professional football. And nothing screams Nepo more like a substitute appearance for Brentford B. I think it's great. It goes to show that your dad's name will only get you so far.
Wow.
I think it's disgusting all these people getting jobs just because of their dad. Yeah. When's Elliot, my dad back on this show, Ian?
Elliot, I don't think people... since and your dad is on the show, I think, next week. Since last week's show, Arsenal's season went from seriously wobbly last Wednesday night to teetering towards disaster at 1:30 on Saturday afternoon to really good at 2:30 to even better by 5 when Man City could only draw at Notts Forest. And how that happened, I have no idea. I watched the Villa-Arsenal game at home. And while my next-door neighbours don't know me that well, they're now fully aware of my negative feelings towards Emi Martinez. Ivo... The title race could yet go the distance. First of all, do you care? Secondly, are you a gooner or are you on the wrong side of all that's right and proper?
I'm on your team, Ian. I'm grateful for the work, and I'm here to support you through this. I mean, it was your birthday, of course, last week.
It was my birthday weekend.
I sent you a cheeky birthday text suggesting that you might not have got the present you wanted on Wednesday night. And Arsenal returned in blistering form for your birthday weekend, which was very pleasing to see. And I watched the City game with my brother, who's a proper Arsenal fan, by which I mean he's a traitor to Swindon Town. And perhaps I thought I was being a bit miserable when I said, would you take a point? And he couldn't have bitten off more of my metaphorical arm for the hypothetical point. I think regardless of the events of the weekend, I think Wednesday points to how it's going to finish, I'm afraid. Ian.
Oh, thanks, Ivo. That was so optimistic to start, and then it all went a bit downhill. I mean,
it's still in your hands. It's in your hands.
It is still in our hands. It is.
I hate things being in my hands. As an indecisive and self-sabotaging person, things are at their very worst when they're in my hands.
Ivo, it's all down to you. Oh no. let's talk about Man City and Arsenal. It was only later on in the evening on Saturday when I watched Match of the Day when I realised quite how many chances Man City had missed, including one from Haaland that I might have scored. Elliot, is the pressure getting to them?
No, I don't think it is.
I was hoping you were going to say yes.
I'm on team either. I came on this show in, I think, October and said Arsenal will mess it up within the next couple of weeks. And to be fair, they haven't. But I think that City have been here before.
They have.
And although they'll drop a point maybe here or there, they will ultimately pull it together. But time is running short, because I've been saying that for ages. I've been going, oh, well, they'll pull it together at some point. But I think the closer it gets, it's going to be the more heartbreaking it's going to be for Arsenal. I almost feel, in a way, you're better sort of letting it slip now so you can do, oh, it was bound to happen, rather than it being in the last two, three games of the season, which is what it looks like it's shaping up for.
Wow, these two of the most depressing comedy answers I've ever had on this show. I mean, I was at the game on Wednesday night, from my seat, not far behind the away dugout of the Emirates. I spent most of that game marvelling at the sheer size of Erling Haaland. Honestly, at times, it was like watching a dad in a kid's game. But in quieter moments, I found myself drawn to Pep Guardiola's skinny, skinny jeans and hooded top, like some tech entrepreneur who's taking time out from a meeting about reversing the ageing process to go three at the back. So it got us wondering here at the Football Zone, what job would managers do if they weren't managing? Ivo, do you think Antonio Conte might be a dentist who wouldn't use anaesthetic? Obviously, it would still be less painful than watching Spurs.
Well, judging by recent results, you'd be hoping for the assistant to be doing most of the major incisions. But to be honest, the one I want to see is Sean Dyche as security at the rave, because Sean Dyche has said in multiple interviews that he used to love going to the Hacienda. And I want him to be one of those sort of security people you see behind the barriers at a sort of all-night sort of techno event. But you can just tell, even though he's there to strike fear into the clientele, and it's fear he's striking, he's actually quite enjoying himself behind it all.
He's
on his own private journey.
Yeah. Elliot, I know you're a big fan of UFC. After watching his spat with Kevin De Bruyne last week, I guess Mikel Arteta would be a contender. I mean, I don't know how far he'd go. Right now, if he left his technical area to drop kick someone, that would result in at least a hefty fine from the FA. But I have no doubt he'd do it if it was allowed within the rules.
Yeah, Arteta very much has the mannerism of the smaller one of the group of mates who kicks off hoping that the bigger boys get involved, doesn't he?
You don't like him, do you? You don't really like him.
No, I think what he's doing at Arsenal is great. But every week there seems to be this sort of argument about, like, oh, why are Arsenal getting these disciplinary things from the FA? It's an absolute joke. And you go, well, because on the touchline, you've got a hooligan. He's one week he's going to turn up in Stone Island and just join in. Like, he's at the moment, he is the Arsenal firm. He is it. He's a player manager of both of like leading the, of being their top boy. It's absolutely insane. But I was going to say Patrick Vieira strikes me as sort of a security on the door of a Soho nightclub, like quite a classy establishment who's very nice to you, but you can tell the minute it kicks off, that guy gets serious. Like, Vieira, he calls you sir as he welcomes you in and stuff. Yeah. And then the minute anything happens, he's going to be in there. He's not going to be messing about.
I mean, Vieira and Dyche on the door, that is, you know, you'd think twice, wouldn't you, really?
You would, but it's interesting that out of the two of us, I've gone for the warehouse rave and Elliot's gone for the Soho members club. So, you know, we're playing against type. That's nice to see.
That's almost it for part one. Before we take a break, Nick Pope's red card for Newcastle against Liverpool and Martin Dubravka's ineligibility means that it's possible that this fella will be playing in a major cup final at Wembley next weekend. Yes, that's right. Loris Karius, there he is. Oh, poor fella. That was a tough, tough day for him, that one. He's the ex-Liverpool keeper, now third choice at Newcastle. I mean, I do feel for him a little bit. Ivo, do you think Manchester United should offer Sergio Ramos a large amount of cash to wander about the technical area, giving Karius the eye?
No, I think that would be difficult to arrange in such a short time frame.
We are talking hypothetical here. I'm not actually saying they should do that. But yes, now you mention it, I think the logistics would be incredibly hard with his PSG commitments.
How would they go about organising that, Ian? Like, even to the start, like, if we're outside the window, it wouldn't be any, there'd be no...
You try getting a work permit to give people evils at Wembley in under a week.
I'm starting to think you've taken this question far too seriously. I was just thinking it might scare him a little bit, but in terms of, well, Elliot, first of all, should Nick Pope play in that game?
For the yes, but also no, because it's very funny.
Yeah.
yes, it's sad that a player can't play in a cup final, but it's also very funny that it's transpired in a series of events where they're literally looking at the under-18s team going, look, does anyone fancy going next?
It's
in
great.
First cup final in nearly 60 years.
I know.
It's very, 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 very funny.
Yeah.
He's barely done a thing wrong all season, but it was one of the maddest bits of goalkeeping you'll ever see.
Eddie Howe said he didn't deserve to be banned. I thought he essentially caught the ball about 18 yards outside the area. But anyway,
it's the definition of red card.
It is the definition of red card.
He's a handsy Pope, and no one likes a handsy Pope. Newcastle, they've got Steve Harper as their goalkeeping coach. Steve Harper is one of the great 21st century Newcastle servants, and he played in their last Wembley final in 1999. He should play for Newcastle.
Bring in Harper.
He should not
just
beat Karius.
Save Karius having to appear in public.
Not Karius again.
Yeah, I think.
Exactly. You know, that.
Anyway, that's it. When we return, we'll get our guest views on Tottenham. You know mine, obviously. And at Manchester United, the bids are in, and we'll assess the runners and riders. See you after the break. Part two of the Football Zone with Ian Stone. That's me, Ivo Graham, and Elliot Steele. Now, just over 2 years ago, Tottenham were managed by one of the best managers in the world and were fighting for fourth in the Premier League. 2 years later, they're managed by another one of the best managers in the world. They spent £200 million and they're fighting for fourth in the Premier League. Ivo, in an ever-changing world where things are moving rapidly and there's always nothing to hold on to, should we thank Spurs for giving us a fixed point? You know, I was thinking, you know that scene in Apollo 13 where they do the adjustments to the violently moving spacecraft, but as long as Earth is in the window, they're fine. So what I'm saying is Tottenham is the Earth. Ceaselessly going round and round.
Yeah, I mean, you hear some profound things on this show, but Tottenham is the Earth. You know, call me an old snowflake, but I love the Earth. I love it.
You know what? I love the Earth too. But you understand that they sort of just seem to exist in a similar orbit, no matter how much money they spend and how whatever manager they have.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, Chelsea are in this sort of new, sort of crazy, sort of banter period. But I can't keep up with the amount of sort of, you know, huge money and potentially bad decisions are being made at Chelsea. Whereas Spurs, it's like all your favourite characters are still there. You know, Hugo Lloris is still making big mistakes in goal. Ben Davis is still playing. You know, Harry Kane is still there. You know, now that he's got that record as well, there is absolutely no reason for Harry Kane to be there anymore. That was the last thing that was like, yeah, but he's actually got this pretty noble sort of life goal on the horizon. Now it is just a man doing a completely pointless thing. And that's very enjoyable.
I mean, he has broken Jimmy Greaves' goal scoring record. I mean, really, as Ivo says, what's the point now? Should he not maybe give it a go somewhere else, get a new challenge? Manchester United is where I'm hearing.
But also United are capable of being terrible as well. So he could, is that what he's going to do? He's just going to go suddenly to all the sort of top six sides who never who aren't winning anything at the moment. Wow. Which is, you know, I know they're in the title race, but they are also capable of complete collapse. As well as Spurs are capable of playing amazing football and then complete collapse.
Only Tottenham could beat Man City 1-0 at home and then lose 4-1 to Leicester. I mean, that is very Spursy. I'm reading that for the West Ham game on Sunday, Antonio Conte was beamed into the Tottenham dressing room, although not in a Star Trek way, obviously. although the way they play can be light years behind the other top six. Ivo, if the word Spursy ever becomes a word in the Oxford English Dictionary, should that count as a trophy?
I just don't think you're in a position to be doing this kind of chat, Ian. It's really terrific that the Premier League title is still in your hands, but yeah. I don't think it hasn't even been St. Tottenham's day yet. You know, I refuse to speak ill of Antonio Conte when he's had such moving issues with his gallbladder, yeah. And I think the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is the only place to see Beyonce within the M25 this summer. there's exciting stuff happening at Spurs. You've got this tragic hero carving out records that no one's ever going to take, but will never be the same as trophies. You've got this Korean hero getting these sort of excruciatingly slow messages of support from his own private fan base. And you've got the rest of the team who don't really know what they're doing around them. And, you know, that's the kind of toxicity you want down the road, ultimately.
It is true. Do you think, Tottenham's ex-manager, which to be fair is not a select group of people, but I'm talking about Jose Mourinho, his team Roma is currently in fourth place in Italy. Napoli are running away with it at the top. Elliot, do you think Jose should have been given more of a chance at Spurs?
No, it was never the right fit. Spurs need a sort of calm manager to help them sail through. Like, going to Spurs as a manager, you probably have to understand that it is going to be incredibly Spursy. That's what they need, and not someone who's going to go in and start creating arguments with the press, then creating arguments with the chairman, and then also probably starting an argument with several of the stewards.
Yeah, I agree. Ivo, would the Dalai Lama be a good fit for Tottenham?
Well, I think, you know, we're back in the sort of, you know, admin challenge realm there, really. Like, what?
That is true. That is true. They have to be beamed in from the top of the Himalayas. Can they even get an internet connection up there?
The fact is, Ian, I just don't know enough about what the Dalai Lama does day to day to be able to sort of transpose that into a management role.
You know what? Me neither. Let's move on. The bids are in for Manchester United. Will it be the oil guys or will it be the chemicals guy? Or maybe some other industrial process business will come in with a late offer. We know about Jim Ratcliffe, the owner of Ineos, but who's Sheikh Jassim bin Hamid Al Thani? Well, he's the chairman of one of the leading banks in Qatar and has apparently been a United fan since he was 10. Well, that was lucky, wasn't it? Elliot, Qatari-owned PSG are such a fine example of how to run a football club. Should United be just a little bit wary?
It's all so horrible, isn't it? It's a business interest rather than it being a sport at the moment. And I'm just finding it all a little bit like, can we stop getting excited that some massive billionaire is about to take over an already massive club? And the people who own PSG are the reason the transfer market's broke, because they paid like 220 million euros for Neymar. That's just what's going to happen again.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the human rights questions, they do come up. Should they be ignored completely, or do we just let a poor Qatari banker have to suffer living in the north? But it is possible that Man United aren't the best value club in the Premier League, although if they sell the Glazers, we'll make around 3 billion quid. Here's a list of Premier League clubs and what they're worth. Ivo, with a triple rollover Euro Millions win, you could just about afford to buy Bournemouth, do you think? Would Mrs. Graham be on board?
I can only assume you're talking about my mother there. And and she's been very supportive of all of my, what she would refer to as, eccentric career choices so far. But I think it's unlikely to be me.
Hello, Mrs. Graham, if you're watching, by the way. We love your son on this show.
She does not want to be drawn into this show. Yeah, you talk to the person whose parent actually is involved in this show.
Elliot, if you had a cheeky $335 million, would you buy Palace? Would you invite the ultras into the director's box? Do they allow massive drums and no shirts in there?
Absolutely not. I would want... The Palace causes me enough stress as it is already, without any financial incentive on it. So for it to then be, you know, my sole source of income would be awful. You have to be insane to want to own a football club.
Yeah, I mean, that is the point, really. Okay, let's have a game of Who Am I? I give the guests some clues and they have to tell me who I'm thinking about. Clue one, I was born in 1971 in Kettering. I was a centre-back and made my first appearance for Chesterfield in 1990. I've won two Premier League Manager of the Month awards and I once said, I'm very loud, but I can't be anything else. If I try to talk quietly, it doesn't sound authentic. In fact, I sound like a weirdo. We'll give you the answer in part three and we'll be back with more of this sort of stuff in a short while.
Join Ellis James and pals down the clubhouse for a light-hearted and entertaining journey through the history of sports forgotten, rarely seen, iconic and hotly debated moments. All episodes available now on the BT Sport app.
Part three of the Football's On with Ivo Graham, Elliot Steele and me, Ian Stone. Before the break, I asked who am I and I gave the guests these clues. Born in 1971 in Kettering, I was a centre-back and made my first appearance for Chesterfield in 1990. I have won two Premier League Manager of the Month awards and I once said, I'm very loud, but I can't be anything else. If I try to talk quietly, it doesn't sound authentic. In fact, I sound like a weirdo. Ivo, any thoughts as to who that might be?
Unbelievable.
I should say at this point that Elliot did actually give me the answer in the break.
Elliot's created a very difficult situation here because I don't think I would have got it. This is a question of honour.
I haven't created the difficult situation. It was Ian who's created. Don't blame me.
It would be dishonourable of me to say Sean Dyche as the manager who's started his career at Chesterfield.
It would be. It was terribly dishonourable. It was indeed Sean Dyche. Well done, Ivo. That was excellent that you got that. So after the sacking of Jesse Marsh, news reached us here at the Football's On that Harry Redknapp had selflessly offered his services to Leeds United. Here's Josh Pugh to tell us what he thinks about it.
Harry Redknapp could be returning to management in the Premier League if he takes a Leeds job. His first call, obviously, Nico Cranchire. Him and Nico out of retirement like two New York cops for one last job. His last management gig was managing the England team in Soccer Aid. But I think if he could stop and nullify a rampant surge from Kasabian, he'll definitely be able to sort out the Leeds back line. He's one of these blokes, Harry, anyway, one of these managers. Like, if he says something, if he praises you, you must feel $1 million. Like when you go to a restaurant and the French waiter says, good choice. You're like, I hope he does it. Go on, Harry. Take it.
Yeah, I just don't think one hears the phrase a rampant surge from Kasabian nearly enough. Ivo, if Harry Redknapp is the answer, what's the question?
Who was deemed by the public to be more popular than John Barrowman and Emily Atack in 2018?
That is indeed the question. I mean, you're a fan. I'm a fan of Harry. Do you like Harry, Ivo?
Yeah, you know, of course, as the future owner of Bournemouth, I...
That's true. You'll be getting him on the phone.
I've got to respect some legends of the South Coast. I was briefly moved by his Spurs team of the late noughties, and I'm quite astonished that he's managed to make it as far in his sort of media career as he has with his just absolutely total disrespect for any sort of technological innovation whatsoever. But for Leeds to go from via Jesse Marsh, Bielsa to Redknapp, it's just that it's two such different kinds of you know, sorry to be ageist, but you know, elderly men. You've got this sort of South American maverick on a bucket, and then you know, who's sort of somehow brilliant despite looking pretty, pretty baffling from the outside, and then you've got just this guy who's got more experience than kind of anyone in football, but who would surely be the last person you want anywhere near that.
Well, I think that's certainly the view of a lot of Leeds fans. I'm told that details of the proposed deal were sketchy, and the only stipulations were that Leeds move their stadium and training ground 270 miles south to within walking distance of Harry's home on the south coast. Elliot, Harry Redknapp managing a northern club seems wrong, doesn't it? It's like having a Pearly King who sounds like Peter Kay.
Yeah, I think having Harry Redknapp managing a football club in this decade altogether seems quite wrong.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the game's obviously moved on a lot and stuff, and he doesn't need to come back to the Premier League. We don't need to relive Harry Redknapp ball in a Pep Guardiola era of the Premiership.
Like Alan Pardew, Tony Pulis and Sam Allardyce, Harry Redknapp no longer features on the list of firefighting managers who need to be called if a club finds itself in trouble. But time waits for no man and things do move on. In the 15th century, the Earl of Wessex was apparently the go-to guy to keep you in the archery and hunting First Division. 9 managers have been sacked so far in the Premier League this season. The record is 10, and that was set by Chelsea on their own. Elliot, who's on the brink? Is Patrick Vieira safe at Palace?
Patrick Vieira is safe at Palace. I think this happens with a club where I notice it when I go down to Palace now, sort of the people who sit behind me and stuff. They've only just started coming to watch Crystal Palace in the last 5 or 6 years.
Oh, they've so got they expectations, don't have they?
Yes. So I remember us losing 3-1 to Colchester and being, and absolutely it deserved to be 5-0 to Colchester. We fluked that one.
Yeah.
And so Vieira is up against it a little bit with them, but no, this is the thing that Crystal Palace fans have to realise. We are meant to be 12th place. That is it. I know you're not going to be happy hearing this, but we come 12th every year. Yeah. That's the rules. That's what happens. I'm fine with it. No frills, no spills. What will probably happen is Arsenal will come to us near the end of the season and we pull out our, oh my God, a top team's coming to us. We need to now stop them winning the league for no reason whatsoever other than we want to finish 12th. And that's how our season works. I think Vieira's done an amazing job. I don't think we replaced Conor Gallagher. I'd go as far back to say we never replaced Johan Cabaye. And then we found someone in Conor Gallagher who was excellent. I also don't think we've replaced Kiarte. We let Kiarte go and he hasn't, you know, he was a very good holding midfielder. And I don't think we've got people doing the job that he was doing at the moment. That's not Vieira's fault.
No, of course it isn't.
Well, I think what's happened at Palace, we're not playing inspiring football at the moment and we're making silly mistakes. But we've got a young team, and that's what happens is you get a young team and people go, oh, it's very exciting, they're very young, but they don't know how to see out a game. And that's what's happened to us this season. We seem to score a goal and then not know how to see out the game.
Yeah,
we'll and Vieira will sort that out.
I think he will. There was an actual septuagenarian managerial appointment this week as 74-year-old Neil Warnock took over the reins at Huddersfield. Would you like to hear an interesting fact, chaps? Richard Jolly on Twitter said that Neil Warnock first managed Huddersfield in 1995 when Gianluigi Buffon was playing in goal for Parma, and the same thing is happening now, 28 years later.
Wow.
And I think 28 years from now they should swap and Buffon should be in charge of Huddersfield while 102-year-old Warnock plays in goal for Parma. Ivo, at least Neil Warnock won't hear the booing that well, will he? Do you have an answer?
I do have an answer, which is that unlike Harry Redknapp, who can't even switch on his computer, as I found out when I did a magazine show with Martin and Roman Kemp with him, Neil Warnock has kept in the game and proven himself to be one of the most prolific creators of memes of the last 5 years.
Yes.
You know, just, you know, back in the autumn, he was putting a Photoshop of him outside Downing Street, saying he was the man for that job. When Sheffield United played Wrexham in the FA Cup a few weeks ago, he put up a truly chilling photograph of himself Photoshopped into the Deadpool poster. You know, I wish him the very best of luck at Huddersfield. But as far as I'm concerned, we're not regaining a great manager. We're losing one of the best new content creators on the scene. And I hate to see that conflict of interest, to be honest. He should be doing his memes. Yeah. He should be doing his live tour. Are you with me now? Coming to the Shepherd's Bush Empire in May. He should be reminiscing and photoshopping. He should not be firefighting at the bottom of the championship.
No, I'm inclined to agree. Elliot, you had Roy Hodgson in charge at Palace, another guy in his 70s. It wasn't all bad, was it?
It was really good. I really enjoyed it. Again, yeah. Absolutely phenomenal at coming 12th. That's the job for a Palace place. Manager.
He knew we're what he was down about, didn't he?
Parrish sits someone down and goes, what are your plans for this club? And they go, well, I would like to get us into Europe. And he goes, get out. We're coming 12th. And that's, no one's taking that from us.
Good old Roy. Now, this show is not just watched in this country. Last week, I was contacted by someone who saw the show in a pub toilet in Bali, Indonesia. And if you're currently, it's true, if you're currently watching in a cubicle somewhere in Southeast Asia, I hope you're enjoying the show and please wash your hands. And wherever you are in the world, if you've seen the show before, you'll know that Ivo Graham is a proud Swindon Town fan. At the present moment, Swindon are sitting smack bang in the middle of League Two, but with a decent chance of a playoff spot. Their new owner is not, as I thought, called Sydney Plumber, but Clem Morfuni, a plumbing tycoon from Sydney, Australia. Ivo, do you think he's got what it takes to plug your leaky defence? I actually looked up plumbing terms on Google for that. Well,
and your top plumbing term was plug.
And then leaky. Yes, that was number two.
You know.
Some of them weren't suitable. I'll be totally honest with you. You try and fit ball cock in some sort of football context. Anyway, what do you think?
I'm bewitched by your technical language, to be honest. You know, and listen, I'm a man who called TaskRabbit to change a light bulb. So, you know, I wouldn't have been able to come up with a better plumbing analogy myself. But I think Clem Morfuni, we must continue to give support to as the manager of Swindon. He did get Swindon out of a very tricky situation a couple of years ago. And so it's still too early to criticise him just because the club appears to be really settling into life in the fourth tier. He basically came off the back of a previous owner who got the club into huge financial difficulties and said, we're going to make Swindon a well-run club again. And that involves basically sort of removing quite a lot of the expectations from the club. And that's a sad thing to have to accept. Because we Swindonians, we're all about that sweet aspiration and just sort of, you know, sitting in League Two, grinding it out and waiting for Wrexham to come and make it a bit more sort of fun is not a terrifically exciting existence. We sold a lot of our most experienced players in January. We bought back Charlie Austin, you know, one of the great Swindon players. He's back at Swindon Town and people thought he was stooping to Brisbane Roar. Well, he's really stooped now. He's followed the fairy tale narrative back to Swindon, but I don't think we've exactly rewarded him by selling any player remotely near him in age and basically announcing to the world that we're very happy to be in League Two for the foreseeable, because that's slightly what's happening.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Elliot, I was reading about Swindon. The whole club cost 14 million quid. And I was thinking about it in Premier League terms. I mean, you don't get much for that in the Premier League. Maybe a third choice left back from a feeder club in Belgium. Or maybe Will Zaha when he's 35 and you finally let him leave.
That is absolutely... There was no need for that.
I know.
There was absolutely...
I know.
We were having a nice chat about Swindon. I was really enjoying it. And then you've had to come in. Well done on not buying him. Well done on getting Pepe. What a great decision that turned out to be for everyone involved, wasn't it?
I would have had Will Zaha, but you won't let him go, mate.
No, and he's going to go this summer and then we're probably going to get relegated or survive for a season and then get relegated.
No.
That's what he's the best player there's ever been at Palace. and our fans. Like I said, there's people who don't watch football start going to watch football, and they don't understand that every team that comes down is just trying to stop Wilfried Zaha. So that that frees up Elise. That also frees up Eze when we decide to bring him on the 75th minute, even though he's one of our better players. And that's, you know, and that allows a lot for the team. The minute that's taken away, it's gonna, the team's gonna have our opposition is gonna have an easier time stopping us.
I see why you kept him. I'm just saying that there's been a certain feeling about him that he wanted to get out for a while. And
it's an absolute hostage situation. He couldn't have made it clearer he wants to go anywhere else.
Exactly.
I don't.
And
we make up to him.
Making.
And we make it up to him by just singing he's too good for you. And that's the payment. It's, yeah, but we'll sing that song about you. You're not going to get that at Man City.
No.
And,
no,
and he'll go, no, but I'll win trophies. And we'll go, yeah, but you know, you don't. What City got that we don't have? They haven't got a Sainsbury's taking up half of one stand.
Yeah, but don't you want to finish 12th? Isn't that what you want?
Exactly. Anyway, isn't that what it's all about?
Anyway, let's have a little quiz. Call yourself a fan. We'll ask our guests some questions to see if they know what's what. Here's the league table so far. This week, all the questions are about Champions League or the European Cup as it used to be known. Elliot, you can go first. Okay, question one. Who's won the second most titles after Real Madrid? Is it Milan, Liverpool or Bayern Munich?
I'm going to say Bayern Munich.
No, it's Milan. They've got 7. Liverpool and Bayern are six each. Madrid, 14. Although at least 5 of them were before Telly, apparently. Anyway, 14 trophies. Which of these players has the most appearances in the European Cup or Champions League? Is it Ryan Giggs, Gerd Müller or Sergio Ramos?
I'm going to say Sergio Ramos.
No, you know what? It's Ryan Giggs, got 141. Muller's got 139. Ramos has got 136. And considering the number of times you should have been sent off, I think he did well to get to 3 figures, actually. But he probably missed about 20 through suspension. It's a decent guess. 0 out of 2, though, Elliot. How many countries have had a club win the trophy? Is it 8, 9 or 10? Are you counting
Italy,
at the moment?
Yes, I am counting.
8, 9 or 10?
Italy, England, Scotland. Oh, didn't Red Star Belgrade win it once or something? No,
they did.
I'm going to go 9.
It's 10, mate. It's 10. Yeah, you took that well. It's the teams are Spain, England, Italy, Germany, France, the Netherlands, Portugal, Romania, Scotland and Yugoslavia. Red Star Belgrade.
Well, one of them doesn't even exist as a country anymore.
Well, yes, but it did at the time, Elliot. So I think that's only fair, really. Question 4. After Ronaldo and Messi, who scored the most goals? Is it Raul, Lewandowski or Benzema?
Raul.
It's Lewandowski. He's got... No, this is really funny now. There's a lot of pressure on the last question. Lewandowski has 91, Benzema has 86, Raul 71. Ronaldo, by the way, has got 140, and Messi a mere 129. Okay, Elliot, this, to avoid the wooden spoon, how much prize money did Real Madrid get for winning the final last season? Was it 20 million euros, 30 million euros or 50 million euros?
Well, I now hope I get this question wrong, because then it's funny. It's 0 is better than 1.
Yes.
So I'm gonna go 20 million.
And he couldn't even get the wrong answer wrong. It is
20 million.
Outstanding work, Elliot. Outstanding. I have to say that is actually funnier. Elliot scored 1 point. After the break, Ivo. Ivo will get a go, and we'll also catch up with our adopted Sunday League team. Part 4 of the football's on before the break. Elliot scored 1 point out of 5. Now it's Ivo's turn. Ivo, how many English teams have been in the final? Is it 8, 9 or 10?
9.
Yes, indeed, it is nice.
Look at that. And I could not have visibly emotionally invested in the question less. But I still just casually.
Just to let you know, Liverpool, Chelsea, Man United, Man City, Spurs, Arsenal, Forest, Villa and Leeds.
Lovely. That's the order I'd have said them in as well.
Yes. Question two. Who's been the runner-up the most? Is it Benfica, Juventus or Bayern Munich?
Bayern Munich.
No, it's Juventus. 9 finals, only 2 wins. Benfica and Bayern have lost 5 times in the final. 1 out of 2. Question 3, Ivo. Who were the first winners of the rebranded Champions League in 92-93? Was it Ajax, Red Star Belgrade or Marseille?
Well, I think Elliot's mentioned Red Star Belgrade last time. So even though it's not necessarily in 1993, I'd just love to get a point that he gave me. Belgrade.
And no, sadly, it's Marseille. They beat Milan in the final. Still 1-1. Okay, after Alfredo Di Stefano, which of these three has the best goals per game ratio? Is it Ronaldo, Messi or Lewandowski?
It's Lewandowski for me.
It is. 0.82 goals per game. I like the way you said that, like you knew who it was. It's very impressive. Messi, 0.8. Ronaldo, 0.77. Di Stefano actually had 0.84 between 55 and 64.
You know me, Ian. I'm always banging on about how Di Stefano's goals per game record will never be topped. That's, you know, if there's an awkward pause in any conversation, that's where I'm going.
Yeah. 2 out of 4. Ivo, question 5. Who was given the inaugural Player of the Season award last year? Was it Benzema, Modric or Casemiro?
Casemiro.
No, it wasn't. It was Benzema. He scored 2 goals in pretty much every game in the knockout stages. Vinicius Jr. won the Young Player Award. But Ivo, that means you got 2 out of 5, which moves him into a solid mid-table position. Very Swindon-esque, I may say. Now, we've been keeping tabs on our Sunday league team, the Newcastle United Supporters Club London, as they restart their season after a rather long break. Last week, in anticipation of the restart, we saw them in training. Let's see if it paid off.
Hello, my name's Danny Ward, reporting for the Football's On, and you join me pitchside with the Newcastle United Supporters Club London for their first game back after the winter break. Today, we're playing Monzo, and as they say in Italy, I'm molto eccitato. Very excited. How did you prepare for this game last night? Were you out late or...?
About 10 pints and a crystal kebab chicken bucket. It's not sitting well in my stomach late, but it's powering them goal kicks.
Ben, new haircut, new you?
Absolutely, yes. That's why I'm here.
Turned out pretty good, but their keeper's a bit... We'll see. So, lots of shots today.
Go show him his boss. Crikey. And we're off. It's hit the woodwork. Now that is just good football. Just off. Monza take the lead. 1-0. Oh no. They've scored again. 2-0 Monza. That's half time. Kieran, how's it looking? We're down. Are we out?
We're down. We're not out. We've created a couple of chances.
Luke, hard yards. You've come off. What's going on?
Yeah, it's a tough game. Toenail's come off a bit there. So, going to have a little bit of rest.
Come on, lads. Keep believing. What a shot. That's a belter. Goal kick from Kieran.
One in.
And it's in! 2-1! The boys are fighting back. It's 2-2 now. Joe, 2 goals, quick succession. Is it the bibs?
Yes, yeah, the bibs. You know, when Man United changed kits half-time because they said they couldn't see each other, got the high-vis on, can't stop scoring. And no. Kieran scoring from a goal kick doesn't hurt either.
The bibs are back in town. 3-2! Numero tres! Or is that Spanish? After a hard-fought win, the final score is 3-2. Let's see what the lads have got to say. Kieran, I've got to tell you, you were my pick for man of the match. Scoring as a goalkeeper.
Yeah. Well, what can I say? The chicken bucket last night fired us through, had all that energy, the protein went straight to my legs, straight in the top corner from goal.
So, Simon, what did you do right?
Score more goals than them. Simple as that, I think.
How are you going to celebrate?
I'm still hungover from Bournemouth, so I'm going to go have a Diet Coke.
Other colas are available. Well, there you have it. I'm exhausted. I need to lie down. I'm not even playing on the pitch. Those guys are off for a well-deserved pint, and I, for one, cannot wait until next week when we take on Aston Villa. This is Danny Ward for the Football's On.
Yes, that was Danny Ward. Ivo, if that man genuinely had 10 pints and a bucket of chicken and then played football the next morning, he has the constitution of a Viking.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was stretching the definition of Camden Youth League a little bit for me. You know, it's nice to see people having real weekends and still carving out a solid performance on the hallowed 5G.
Yeah, quite. Elliot, 2-0 down at half-time, 3-2 up at full-time. That is the score that dreams are made of, isn't it?
It's the greatest thing I've ever seen here. It is the... I didn't believe it's actually given me a new lease on life and a new outlook that when the going gets tough, the tough get going. And even if you've had 10 pints the night before, you can still score a goal kick.
Same number of goals this season as Emi Martinez. That's it. So nice to say that. That's it for the Football Zone. Thanks to Ivo Graham, Elliot Steele, Josh Pugh and Danny Ward. We are back next week. I'm Ian Stone. Thanks for watching.